It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Thursday the 25th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. All this week, we're looking at technology trends expected in 2015. And if you thought privacy was a theme in 2014, get ready for this topic to not go anywhere. Truth is, privacy is both more valuable and less attainable than it ever was, thanks to the internet. But there are some who are optimistic for the future. Pew just released a report on the future of online privacy, asking a ton of experts how they thought the next 10 years might play out. Lee Rainey is director of Internet Science and Technology Research at the Pew Research Center. We called him up to get a sense of the report.
We canvassed about 2,500 experts about where privacy might be in the year 2025, a decade out. And a lot of them were saying that it will take on class dimensions, that richer people, people who have a lot of resources, will be able to purchase privacy and it will create new imbalances in society.
What about how this plays out with the Internet of Things?
The Internet of Things is just around the corner. People are starting to wear the Internet. They're starting to drive in the Internet. They're starting to enter rooms that are Internet connected. And all of those things are essentially tattling on us, in the words of one of the respondents to our survey. So lots more data are collected about our habits and the things that we do as we march through life. So this will be a very different environment for privacy in the future. It'll essentially be a return to that life in the very close-in village of several centuries ago, where everybody knows everybody else's business. And there will be some new technology tools that might give them the power to control some of the information.
Well, I was just going to say, you're really bumming me out and making me think I have to start a savings account for my personal digital privacy. But I'm wondering if there are some pieces of optimism to pull about the technology that's being created now.
There are lots of efforts underway among technologists to give people the capacity to control their information, information being shared with vendors, their information being captured by the government. Another thing is that there are any number of experts in our survey who think that the laws and legal regimes of privacy are going to have to change. The final theme that they strike is that we ourselves are going to change. So our own sort of psychologies will adjust to this new reality, and that won't be a bad thing.
Lee Rainey is the director of Internet Science and Technology Research at the Pew Research Center. Lee, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Marketplace has been on the air for 25 years, and that couldn't have happened without the support from listeners like you. So please make a tax-deductible gift to Marketplace today and help us keep our coverage relevant and compelling. And you should know that your gift, in any amount, counts twice, thanks to a dollar-for-dollar match from the Candida Fund. Donate at marketplace.org by December 31st and help us reach our goal of at least 2,500 donors. Thanks for your support. We're looking back this week as well as forward, listening to some of our favorite interviews from the year. And you may remember that we ran a series on how technology is changing the way music is produced. Well, Merrill Garbus, also known as the loop-happy multi-instrumentalist TuneYards, was featured in that series. So let's take another listen to this music and tech conversation from May. Merrill Garbus is the lead singer and songwriter of TuneYards. Hello, Merrill.
Hello.
I think maybe one of the first times I saw you perform, you had a mic and you were walking around looping rhythms and drum hits on top of each other. How did you come to that?
I started by playing ukulele songs at open mics, you know, and kind of feeling like, you know, there's that chick with the ukulele again.
Oh, man, and, the chick with the ukulele.
Which, you know, there are many chicks with ukuleles that are...
are amazing.
Yeah. And there was just something in me where I needed, you know, I needed drums. So I started with a looping pedal banging on the uke and looping the percussion that I could make on that instrument.
At what point were drum machines and sort of more modern technology, at what point did that sort of become part of your writing process?
Well, I have been called a Luddite in my life, so it was kind of late in the game. But me using technology in order to keep some of that human flawed quality in it is where I'm interested in using technology. And now listening to the album that we just created, in which we used the Tempest drum machine, from the beginning of the song to the end of the song, you're like, whoa, it's not far off, but it has this human quality of its own.
I have this Yamaha keyboard, and it does this amazing thing when its batteries start to die. It kind of slows down, and then it gets like really distorted, and then it sort of like echoes, and you're like, whoa, this is awesome. And then by the time you try and record it, the batteries are dead.
Exactly, and it's totally different. Well, I like to think about, you know, how messed up human beings can be, and that computers totally have those glitches. In our latest album, I tried to use the drum machine so fast that sometimes it couldn't read my fingertip fast enough, and it would come out with different permutations of that rhythm. And then I took that rhythm to use in the composition of the first track on the album, so that, you know, instead of diddle-it, 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 it comes out as diddle-it, 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 diddle-it.
Dreams aren't about the future. He tried to tell me that I had a right to sing just like a bird has to.
There's this physical element of how do I engage with my music in a way that's not just sitting in front of a computer, because, you know, my butt is sore from sitting in front of computers. My goal is always to connect with other human beings. So if it ever feels like technology is alienating me from my audiences, then it's got to go.
Meryl Garbus is the lead singer and songwriter for Tune Yards. Meryl, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
And before we go, every little snowflake is special, right? Wrong. Well, at least researchers are now trying to create model snowflakes with computer programs, you know, for science. And they're doing it at Caltech, where you don't get a lot of naturally occurring snowflakes. So, how's it going?
It sounds easier than it is.
That is Caltech physics professor Ken Liebrecht. He says you might make ice in your freezer real easy, but it's much harder to simulate ice production in a computer.
One thing people are always curious about is the fact that the six arms of a snowflake all look the same, even though they're very complicated looking. The growth depends very sensitively on things like temperature, and each time it moves to a different spot, the growth changes a little bit. And it was only a few years ago that people started being able to write programs to model crystal growth of snowflakes to produce structures that were both branched and faceted, which is what real snowflakes are.
Well, let's hope the snow keeps on coming from the sky for now. Merry Christmas. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.